Hi, and welcome to the Day Trading for Beginners podcast. This is episode 22. And in this episode, we are going to do a full review of options. So, you know, we're nearing the end of April. We've been at this for 4 months, and for almost the past month, we have been discussing options, and we sort of have done a full sort of introduction to options. So I thought today we would sort of do a full sort of recap episode, because next month, we are getting into technical analysis, and then we're going to start at paper trading and sort of documenting everything in our trading journal. So if you have not downloaded our 6 month blueprint that outlines everything that I'm doing to become a full-time day trader in the first 6 months, you can find a link to that in the show notes, or you can go to stokestrades.com/blueprint. So again, we've been studying options for the past month, and personally, I feel that I have a pretty good grasp on sort of an introduction level of what these options are. And I thought this episode, I would sort of just walk through all my past notes about options and just sort of have a sort of non-scripted discussion about options and sort of review everything that we've spoken about. Now, to sort of have a realistic viewpoint on this, you know, personally, you know, for the past, you know, 4 or 5 weeks, we've been talking options, but this is something that I've been personally doing, you know, when I have a few hours during the day or on the weekends. So I think I have a good grasp of, you know, what options are and some of the definitions of options, but I certainly don't have that real good experience trading options. Or, you know, if I think about, you know, why someone would be bullish or why you would want to buy a certain option over another scenario, my mind certainly doesn't have the ability to figure that out right away. And that's sort of, you know, probably something normal to consider, that, you know, I've really just spent, you know, several hours studying this. Options are a big topic. They can be quite complicated. Certainly looking to the whole strategy side of things, we would need, you know, way more time to sort of master these. So certainly you're not going to master options studying them for a month just on the weekends. But what's great about what we're doing here is we're going to move on to technical analysis, and we're going to have a good base of getting started. And then past that 6 month point, we're going to actually look into some strategy, and we're going to do paper trading. So, you know, in past episodes, we talked about the importance of paper trading for a long time until you get comfortable, until you're profitable. And I can just see that that is going to work when we start paper trading options. So it's one thing to kind of know what a call option is, and we'll talk about that. But I think it's another thing to actually put a call option through your brokerage account, make the trade, have a reason why you made the trade, and then figure out if that trade did well for you, or if, you know, you lost on that trade, and then analyze your trades. And that's something we are going to do. Again, we're going to set up a trading journal where we document everything, and then we review all our trades, and we say, hey, you know, we bought a call option with the stock in this position, and it worked out or it didn't work out, and we'll analyze why that is. So again, it's good to have, or you obviously need to have an understanding of what all this stuff is. We've been studying that, but you really need to get out there and actually trade. And that's what we were going to do when we actually start paper trading and we kind of follow some sort of strategy. So I just wanted to kind of share that and keep that in mind, that, you know, you can study all this stuff, but it's sort of like riding a bike. You know, you can read about, you know, how you ride a bike and what you need to do, but you kind of got to get on the bike. You got to maybe fall down a few times. You got to, you know, actually, you know, move your legs until you can actually say that you know how to do it. You've got to actually physically do it. And I think it's the same for just trading and making the trades and seeing what worked out and what didn't. So again, you know, we've studied options for a while, certainly not a master at it. And you know, think about that from your own perspective too, or, you know, the amount of time that you can put into this. You know, if you're like me where, you know, you've got other commitments and you want to do day trading, but you need to learn, you know, at night or on the weekends, you've got family, you've got other things, just have a realistic viewpoint of it and just understand that you're not going to master this in a month. I certainly have it, but, you know, continue to chip away at it every week, put in the work. And within, you know, the end of 6 months, the end of a year, we are going to be way farther ahead than we are currently. And we're just going to be one step closer to be able to, you know, trade as a full time day trader. So just keep that in mind. Okay. So enough of that. Let's jump into it. Let's talk options. Let's review everything. in sort of a non-scripted sort of discussion. So the first time we talked about this was back actually in February. We had a podcast that just talked about what an actual option is. So in that episode, we, you know, it was like a pure sort of intro to options. And we kind of stated that options, they're contracts, and they give the buyer the right, but remember, not the obligation, to either buy or sell a certain asset. So we're talking stocks at a specified price before a certain date. So it is a contract, but also keep in mind that, you know, you're not going to sit down and write a contract or read through it. You buy and sell these things with one click of a button in your brokerage account. So it's just, you know, an online, you know, database of these options where you can just click buy, click sell instantaneously. But at their core, you know, fundamentally, they are contracts. So when you buy an option, again, you have the right to either buy or sell the underlying asset, but you don't have that obligation. So these are contracts that will expire, and they have various components that we spoke about. So there's some key terms in what makes up an option. So the first thing is the strike price. It's also called the exercise price. So that's the price at which the stock can be bought or sold. So every option is going to have a strike price, and then every option is going to have an expiration date. So these contracts expire. So many people, they call, they relate to options as a wasting asset or something that's going to expire. And that expiration date, when you're first learning about it, you know, you don't think too much of it. But when we start to talk about the Greeks and the time value of money and how your option can decay, and when we look at the prices of option, that expiration date is an important factor, because as you get closer to that end date, you know, the price of your option, the value of that option is decreasing, because, you know, there's less time for, you know, the stock to either rise or fall in your favor. So every day that the option gets closer to expiry date, you know, you lose a little bit of value in the option. So we've got the strike price. That's the price that the underlying stock can be bought at or sold at. You got your expiration date, and then we have the premium. So these option contracts, they cost money. You need to buy them or you can sell them. So the premium is the term that's associated with the cost of an option. And then we have these terms called intrinsic value. So that's going to be the difference of the current stock price and the strike price. If it's profitable, and we'll talk about that when we talk about in the money, at the money, and out of the money options. So the main key terms there, again, strike price, expiration date, and then the premium. So the types of options are call options and put options. So the call option, that's the one that gives you the right, but not the obligation, to buy a stock at a predetermined strike price. So you can have a call option. You can buy these on a stock. So we'll talk Tesla stock. So you can buy a call option to buy Tesla at a certain price within a time frame. So that is a call option. And then the other option are put options. And then that gives you the right to sell a stock at a predetermined price within the expiration window. So, you know, buying a call, generally, what happens if you think that the price of a stock is going to go up, then you would buy a call option on that stock. So basically, you buy the option at a premium, so it's going to cost you money, and then you'll have the right to buy the stock at a predetermined price. And if that stock goes up, 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 well, you know, your option that you're holding, it has value now. And you can basically exercise that option at your strike price. And if that's lower than what the stock is currently trading for, then you have a little bit of profit there. And then the put is the other way around. If you think a stock is going to go down, you can buy a put option, and that gives you the right to sell the stock at your predetermined strike price. So if the stock falls, and you have the right to sell at a higher price, well, you can buy the stock when it's really, really low, and then sell it at that strike price that you have in your contract. So that is a put option. So we talked about, you know, random examples. We can sort of, you know, just talk you know, some figures here. You know, if a stock is trading at $50, and you buy a call option, to buy that stock at 52 and you paid $2 for that contract, if that stock goes up to 60, well, you know, you have the right to buy at 52. The stock is currently trading at $60. You've got $8 worth of profit there. So that contract you have is more valuable. And obviously you would minus off the premium that you paid. And then the put option, again, you know, if a stock is currently trading at $100 per share and you bought a put option, which gives you the right to sell that stock at 95, you think it's going to go down. Well, you know, if within the month it goes down to something like $80, well, you have the right to sell at 95. The stock's currently at 80. You can buy at 80, sell at 95, and you've got $15 worth of profit there, you know, minus whatever you paid for that premium. So that's just, you know, how a call option works and how a put option works. Now, the premium, you know, generally these option contracts, they have what's called a contract multiplier. So it's usually always 100. So if you buy one call option on a stock, basically, you have the right to buy or sell 100 shares. So the premium, so the prices of these contracts, they're always listed at per share. So if it's $2 or if it's $5 or $10, just know that you've got to multiply that by 100. So it's going to be, you know, $200 and so on. So one option contract controls 100 shares. So the prices are quoted at a per share basis. You always need to multiply them by 100. So then we've got these terms called in the money, out of the money, and at the money. So if you think about them, they're pretty self-explanatory. When you have an option, you have an option and it's in the money. What that means is that if you were to exercise the option, it would be profitable and it would have what's called intrinsic value. So I like that example we spoke about. If the stock was trading at 50 and you bought a call option to buy that stock at 52 and it runs up all the way to 60, well, the difference there is $8. So that means that that option, it's in the money. It has intrinsic value of $8. You have the right to buy at 52, but it's currently trading on the market for $60. You've got $8 of what's called intrinsic value. So again, you can buy at 52 and instantly sell at 60, and you're up $8 per share, you know, times 100, you would be up $800 in that case. And that $800, it's called intrinsic value. And that option is called in the money. So if you were to exercise it, there is value there. There's intrinsic value. And then out of the money just means that, you know, at the moment, if you were to exercise the option, the call option is out of the money. There is no intrinsic value. So if you were wrong in your outlook and you know, were thinking a stock was going to go up and you bought a call option to buy at 52 and the stock was currently trading at 50 and, you know, suddenly it goes down to, you know, 49 or 48. Well, that option contract, it's out of the money. You have the right to buy at 52, but it's currently trading on the market at, you know, 48. There's no value there. You would never buy at 52 when the current stock is trading for less. So those options are called out of the money. And then at the money is when the strike price and the stock price are basically the same or very, very close to the same. So those are just some general terms regarding both call and put options. And then we spoke a little bit there about exercising the option. So basically when you exercise an option, it just means that you want to, you know, exercise your right to either buy or sell. So with a call option, you have the right to buy 100 shares. And then with a put option, you have the right to sell 100 shares. And if you exercise the option, that means that you want to go ahead and buy the shares for the strike price that's within your contract. Or for put options, you want to sell those shares for the strike price. But we're talking day trading on this podcast. And most traders you don't generally exercise the option. So there are some strategies where you would potentially buy options, either call or puts, thinking that, you know, you are looking to exercise and actually own the shares at the end of the expiration, or at the when the option expires. But in general terms, for day trading and swing trading, people don't exercise the option. What people do is they sell before the options expire. So if you have a option and it expires in, you know, 30 days or 60 days, once that option starts to gain more value, then generally people like to take profits and either sell or close their positions with these options. So generally, you aren't going to exercise your options and collect them. Traders are just going to trade the options themselves. So, you know, if you buy a call option for the stock, like we said, and it's trading at 50, and you bought the right to buy at 52, and it runs up to 60, and there's still, you know, some time in the expiration date, you know, you might not want to hold on to that. You might want to then flip and sell that option. So, you know, if you paid $2 for that, and now it's in the money and it's gained a value, the stock has run up, you know, that you paid $2, you paid $200 for that, you know, you might be able to now trade it back in the market for maybe $4, and you've just, you know, doubled your money. So again, that's just an example, but it's the idea that these options, they're traded as opposed to exercised. So something to keep in mind, especially with the whole day trading mindset here. We're probably, you're going to put on these trades, and you might trade them within the day. Swing trading, you might, you know, hold on to options overnight, but they are generally traded as opposed to exercised in most cases for most day traders. So I think that's a good overview of, you know, what these options are. And then after we kind of ran through that episode back in February, we had another episode out in March where we talked about selling options. So in that first sort of discussion there, we were talking mainly about the right to either buy or sell, because that's when you buy the contract. But you can also be the one on the other end of the contract, on the other side of the contract, where you're selling these contracts or you're writing these contracts. And again, this is done in your brokerage account, and it's just done through a click of a button. So you're not actually, you know, creating these contracts and uploading them to your computer or anything of that nature. You don't need to do anything specific if you want to actually sell a contract. You just, you know, click the sell button, and then you have this obligation now. So the big difference between buying options and versus selling them is you have the obligation. If someone on the other end wants to exercise their option, then you will either need to sell or buy shares that are made up within that contract. So as the seller of an option, and even as the buyer, you don't actually need to own any stock itself to sell or buy any type of option. You don't need to own the stock itself yourself. You can basically just sell these call options. And the reason why, or put options, the reason why people sell call and put options is one, is that you get the premium. So when you buy a call option, which we just spoke about, it has a strike price, it has an expiration date, and then it has the premium. It's either $2 in our example, or it was $3. So, you know, if you buy a call option, which gives you the right to, you know, buy a stock at $52, it's currently trading for $50, and you bought a call option, you pay $2 for that times 100, you pay $200. Well, you're paying someone that premium, and that is what the call what the option sellers receive. So when you sell call options or you sell put options, you gain money right away. So you gain income right away. And then basically you would hope that these options just expire worthless. So when you sell options, you gain that premium right away. But unfortunately, you are obligated to meet the requirements of the option if it gets exercised. And that's that term assigned. So if an option is assigned, assignment happens to the seller. So if you sell a call option or you sell a put option and you know it ends up in the money and the holder wants to exercise that, you basically are assigned and you need to deliver those shares. So sometimes you got to flip-flop back in your mind here, but you know, if you buy a call option, which gives you the right to buy a stock at a certain price and you want to exercise that, well, the person on the other end needs to, is obligated to sell you those shares. So if you buy a call option at $52 a strike, your strike price is 52 and the stock runs up to 60 and you want to exercise that option and buy 100 shares at $52, well, that call seller needs to sell you those shares at $52. And on the same side as a put, if you want to kind of think about this as a put, when you buy a put option, you have the right to sell a stock at a certain price. So you bought a put at $95, the stock falls all the way to 80 and you want to exercise that option. Well, now you have the right to sell at 95. So as the put seller, you're obligated to buy shares at $95. So that is the whole notion with selling calls and put selling options. You are obligated to either buy or sell the 100 shares in the contract if you are assigned, if these option contracts do get exercised. So in terms of selling call options, you know, we talked about why you would sell options. You get that premium. So you get the premium right away. But when you're selling call options, there are two types. There are referred to as a covered call or a naked call. So if you sell a call option to someone and you own the underlying shares, that is referred to as a covered call, meaning your position is covered. So for that example, if you sold a call option on a stock that's just called Tesla stock, which has a strike price of 52 and the stock runs up to 60, that person now wants to buy 100 shares at 52 and you have you sold a covered call, meaning you have the 100 shares in your account. So you're covered. So if they exercise that and you need to deliver those 100 shares of Tesla, you can basically sell them your shares. They are in your account and you would sell them to the option contract buyer for $52 each. Whereas if you didn't own those Tesla shares, that would be referred to as a naked call. And what that would do is it's a little bit more risky because now you have to sell Tesla at $52, but it's trading at 60. So what do? You have to go into the market, buy 100 shares of Tesla at $60. So that's $6,000. And then you need to sell it to the call option holder at $52. And you would lose, you know, in that position, you'd be down $800 in that position. So a naked call is riskier when you don't actually own the shares in your account, whereas a covered call is when you sell a call option, but you have the shares in your account. If you get assigned, you know, you have them, you don't need to go into the market and buy them or sell them at a loss, you don't need to go into the market and buy them high and then sell them low to the option buyer. So that is a covered call and naked call. And then puts, on the other hand, something referred to as a cash secured put. So if you sell a put option, basically what that means is you are obligated to buy the shares at the strike price. So again, sometimes in your mind, you need to work this through. If you're buying a put option that gives you the right to sell stock at a certain price, so on the other end, if you sell a put option, you are obligated to buy the shares at a certain price. So a cash secured put means that you have the cash on hand if you are assigned. So, you know, if someone buys a put option with a strike price of 95 and the stock falls all the way to 80 and they exercise that option, meaning they have the right to sell at $95, 100 shares. Basically what they could do is they can buy 100 shares at $80 and then instantly sell them to you at at $95 per share, 100 shares. So if you have a cash secured put, you sold that, that would mean that you have that $9,500 in your account and you can buy those shares if you need to. So it's less risky when you have the cash to buy the put option. And, you know, also, you know, people sell put options when they don't mind buying a stock as the price goes down. So right now, end of April, you know, Tesla just had an earnings call and I was interested in buying stock as it went down. And I actually purchased stock right around 145. So I could have sold put options with a strike price of 145 when the stock was, you know, up around 160 before earnings happened. And if the stock fell and I was obligated to buy those shares as they got lower, I'd be okay with that because I was looking at buying Tesla as the price went down. So when you sell put options, if you are interested in actually owning the underlying stock, then that is a good strategy as well. You know, you have the cash on hand to buy the stock if you are assigned you're okay with buying it as the price goes down. So if there are big companies like Tesla that's going to rebound or other big companies that are just going to fall potentially and then rise back up, you know, you can sell put options if you're okay with being obligated to buy those shares as their price goes down. Now, there's also this notion with options of closing out positions. So you can do this as basically, you can think of this as the buyers or the sellers. It's referred to as a called, it's referred to as a buy to close. So if you buy an option and it increases in value, you can obviously go and sell that option and take that premium. And then on the other flip side, you know, if you've sold an option and it's sort of gone against you, you can go back and buy it at a loss before, you know, your loss gets worse or before you risk having to have the shares assigned to you. So basically, you can trade these options. You can close these positions out. Again, this whole idea that traders don't exercise options. If you buy a call or a put option, you can sell it anytime you want. And then if you've sold someone a call option, you can go ahead and buy the call option back and close out your position without incurring more of a loss. And basically, you wouldn't be buying back the exact one that you sold, but on the market, you'd buy it for the same strike price, the same expiration date. And then your obligations just shift to whoever buys or whoever buys the option that you are currently closing out. So basically, again, trading, you trade these options. You don't have to wait till they expire. You can trade them right away the same day. You can close out your positions as well. So that's, you know, what options are: buying options, call options, and then you can be on the other side, what's called selling or writing or shorting options. Those terms are all the same. And then, you know, later, you know, earlier this month, we had an episode where we talked about the prices. So in, you know, what we just talked about, the premium of the options, we kind of sort of gave examples of, you know, premium of just $2 per share, $3 per share. But there's a whole, you know, not science, but there's a whole mathematical formula and factors that go into these prices of these options. And we talked about, you know, in the money, at the money, and out of the money. So that whole intrinsic value is found with options that are in the money. So the formula, there's two formulas for call options and put options. Basically, the intrinsic value for call options, you take your current stock price and you minus the strike price. So again, back to that example, we had a strike price of 52 and the stock ran up to 60. So the intrinsic value there is going to be $8. And then for put options, you know, it's just the other way around. It's going to be your strike price minus your stock price. So we had a strike price, we called it $95, and the stock went all the way down to 80. So 95 minus 80. So your put option intrinsic value there is $15. So the price of an option in the market, it's always at least the value of its intrinsic value when it is in the money. So those two examples that we just did, that call and that put, the strike price of 52, the stock runs up to 60 for that call option, that is in the money. And what that means is that that price of that option, it's always going to be at least $8. There's like a rule, that's what it is. And then that put option with that intrinsic value there of $15, right? The strike price is 95 and you have the right to sell it at 95 and it drops all the way down to 80. You can buy at 80, sell at 95. You've got $15 there of intrinsic value. So if you were to go and sell that option, it's at least worth $15. If you were to sell your call option, it's at least worth $8. So the intrinsic value of an option, it occurs when the option is in the money, and that is the option price. It's always going to be at least the intrinsic value. Now, here is the other part with the prices of these options. If we were to go and look at those options on the market, that call option with a strike price of 52 and it's ran up to 60, it's got $8 of intrinsic value. How much is that actually going to be worth? It's actually going to be more than $8 on the market. And then the same with the put, the $15 intrinsic value. If you were to go and sell that, you would be getting more because options also have what's called extrinsic value. The intrinsic value is, you know, just those formulas, the stock price minus the strike price or the strike price minus the stock price. But intrinsic value is basically all the other things that make up the price. So if that call option has intrinsic value of $8, but it's currently trading at $10, that is the intrinsic value. So the price of the option minus its intrinsic value is going to be its extrinsic value. So that value there, that extra $2, that is influenced by the time till expiration date, something called implied volatility, and then the current sort of market dynamic. So if you were to look just at the time value there, the expiration date, if you were to look at that first call option, if it expired this Friday, so in a week, and it cost $10 and it had intrinsic value of $8, so that means that that $2 is represented by extrinsic value, the implied volatility, and the time till expiration date. But what happens if that option, instead of expiring this Friday, it expires in 60 days? Well, it would be worth much more than $10. It would have extrinsic value more than $2 because it has 60 more days where the price could go even higher than $60. It could, the probability that the price goes up is above $60 and more is much higher in 60 days as opposed to just, you know, a few days left in the week. So extrinsic value, it is factored in by firstly the time until expiration date. So options that have a longer expiration date or a longer time until they expire will have more value in general. And then the other thing that it has is this thing called implied volatility. So we talked about this implied volatility. You can change the word implied to things like suggested or hinted at. And then volatility is basically how much a stock price changes over a certain period. So a stock that has a lot of or a higher level of implied volatility, it's represented by a percentage, is going to have a option price that is higher. There's more of a probability that the stock moves up or moves down. So that implied volatility affects the options price. And actually the options price actually turns around and affects what the implied volatility percentages are. So, you know, when you look at a stock and it has an implied volatility of 50%, what that is suggesting that is that in the next year, the stock could move up by 50% or down by 50%. And when you compare that to a stock with a implied volatility of maybe just 5%, well, you know, over the next year, it could move up by 5%. It could move down by 5%. So it's much a lower level of implied volatility. Therefore, the options prices with all else being equal, will be much less than the stock that had a higher implied volatility. With higher implied volatility, there's more probability that the stock is going to run up or going to run down, which affects, the value potential of that option. So that's the other sort of side of extrinsic value. You've got intrinsic value, and then you've got that extrinsic value, which is made up of, you know, the time until the thing expires, time until the option expires, the implied volatility, how much the stock is going to move around, and then, you know, other dynamics that are happening within the market. So in terms of, you know, things that influence an options price, you know, firstly, we had, you know, the stock price movement. As that stock rose up $60 from 52, you know, that affects the options price because it influences the intrinsic value in the option. And same with the put option. As the stock price falls down, you know, you get more intrinsic value there with that put option. So stock price movements affect options prices. Time decay. So as the option nears its expiration date, the extrinsic value is going to erode. That's something called a time decay or theta, which we'll talk about in the Greeks next. So time decay is going to affect the options price. And then the implied volatility, you know, the market's expectation of whether the stock is going to go up or down, or just its movement. Whether the expectation of how high the stock could move is going to affect the prices of the option. So naturally, you know, when we studied prices, the next thing to look at were these things called the options, the option Greeks. And I mentioned theta there, that refers to the time decay of options. So the other things, again, the Greeks, at first, when you think about them, you know, they might be a little intimidating, or they sort of work for me. They're just math sort of rules. You don't need to know the math. So at this point, I don't know any of the formulas for these Greek formulations and representations. But basically, they are found within your brokerage account, in your dashboard, whenever you're looking at trading options. You can go and you can look at what these Greeks are. And then once you understand what they are, they will help you determine, you know, what potentially could happen with this, with the prices of options. So in the podcast that we did, we talked about this analogy between a pilot and flying a plane with these Greeks. And we sort of talked about the five of them and how they relate to instruments when you're flying. So I thought it was a good example, and it was actually given to me from ChatGPT when I asked ChatGPT, you know, to explain this stuff to me. So we've got five main Greeks that we covered. It's called Delta, Gamma, Theta, Vega, and Rho. And then Delta, we talked about how Delta is sort of like the speedometer when you're flying a plane. It tells you how fast, you know, the plane is moving. Well, Delta will tell you how much a options price will increase when the stock price goes up by $1. So if you have an option on Tesla and Tesla goes up by $1, well, Delta will tell you what your option price will go up by. So if the Delta is 0.5 and Tesla moves up by $1, then your options price is going to move up by 50 cents. So that's Delta. You know, we talked about that as the speedometer. And then that shows you with $1 change in the stock, what happens to the option price. And then gamma, we kind of related gamma to the acceleration gauge. So gamma shows how quickly delta is going to change. So if gamma has a value of 0.1 and the stock goes up by $1, then the option price will go up by 50 cents, if that's what our delta was. Well, gamma now is going to change delta to 0.6. So gamma was 0.1. It now changes, and it's the accelerator. It changes delta. So when the stock goes up by another dollar, well, the option price is now going to go up by 0.6 because gamma has increased delta. So accelerator, delta, speedometer. And then we talked theta. Theta is, we referred to that as like the fuel gauge in your plane. So if you're flying your plane, obviously, you know, you're losing fuel the longer you go. And that refers to the time decay. So options, again, they have an expiration date. Each day passes, the time value decreases the value in your option. And when you look at the value of theta, it's a value, and that says that everything else being equal, your options price every day will drop by this amount. And again, all these figures you can find in your brokerage account under any option that you look at. And then the last two, Vega and Rho. Vega measures sensitivity to volatility. So we kind of talked about that as like the turbulence in the plane. So Vega tells you how much the price of the option will change when there's 1% increase or decrease in the option's implied volatility. So basically, Vega represents this change that as the option as the option's implied volatility moves, Vega will tell you what will happen to the price of that option as the stock as the stock's implied volatility changes. And the Rho is sort of not as commonly used as the other ones. It talks about interest rates, so it tells you how much the option's price might change when the interest rates go up or down. So when you are buying and selling options, you have all this data in your brokerage account. And then, you know, once you sort of know, you know, personally at the stage I'm at now, I sort of know what these mean, but I don't have a good idea of the values of these. So, you know, if I were to say that this has a delta of 0.5, I'm not sure yet with my knowledge if that's a good, if that's a high delta. So again, I know what it is, but I don't know the effects of the actual numbers. So in terms of gamma, you know, I've seen gamma is about 0.1, but is that a high or low gamma? I'm not sure. Again, at this stage of where I'm at in learning, I know what these things are, but I don't know any actual values. And that's why it's going to be so good to actually do some paper trading, put these things on, and I can check out a stock and I can actually look at its delta, look at its gamma, make a trade, see the implications, and so on. So certainly, there is a lot more to learn about these Greeks, but I think that's a good sort of intro into exactly what they are. So again, delta, gamma, theta, Vega, Rho. And I think if you just sort of re-listen to this option or go back to the date, I'll give you the date right here. It's the April 15th episode. If you go to that episode, you can listen to a longer version of this, and you can actually in the show notes find the article that I have, which goes into more detail about these specific values. So the last, just to wrap up our intro here, the last thing that we covered was option spread. So we talked about, you know, what options are, buying and selling, call and put options. We talked about intrinsic, extrinsic value with the price of options, and then how the Greeks will help you look at the price of an option. And then we talked about option spreads. So option spreads are sort of like your first step into strategy in terms of trading options. And we just talked about exactly what they were. Again, just like the Greeks, we talked about what they were. But again, moving forward, there's various types of spreads, and then there's strategy with when to use various spreads. But again, here, let's just kind of review what an actual option spread is. And what it is it just involves buying and selling call options or put options on the same stock. So there's what's called a vertical spread, a horizontal spread, and then a diagonal spread. So a vertical spread basically means that if you pick a stock like Tesla, if you want to set this up, and again, it's done in your brokerage account very easily, which is a few clicks of a button. But what you would do to set up a vertical spread is you would buy a Tesla call option, and at the same time, you're going to sell a Tesla call option. So you're buying a call and you're selling a call. You can also buy a put or sell a put, but you can't buy a call and then sell a put, or buy a put and sell a call. So it has to be the same thing. You're doing calls or you're doing puts. So you buy a call option on Tesla, you sell a call option on Tesla, and what's going to be different for vertical spreads is just the strike price. So you would buy a call option with a strike price of say $150 that expires in 1 month, and then you sell a call option at the same time with a strike price of $160. So that's a vertical spread. And then you do the same for puts. Horizontal spread is where the strike prices are the same, the stock is the same, but the expiration dates are different. That's sometimes referred to as a calendar spread as well. So you'd buy a call option that expires in 6 months and sell the exact same type of call option, same strike price, but maybe it expires in 1 month. And then a diagonal spread is basically a combination of both of these. The strike prices are different and the expiration dates are different. All that is the same is the underlying stock and whether it is a call that you're buying and selling or a put that you're buying and selling. So the vertical spreads seem to be a bit more commonly used, at least in some of the learning materials that I was going through. And I think, a simple way to do that is just talk through sort of one example of a vertical spread. And again, in the show notes from April 22nd, there's an article referenced, and it has a lot of definitions because there's several names for these different types of spreads. I'm not going to go through them all here on this episode, but there are a few terms that you might need to sort of memorize and think about just so you can get a handle on all the terminology, because there's, you know, three ways to say the same type of thing. And sometimes that happens a lot with these options. So if we just kind of go through that example of a vertical spread really quickly, and we can kind of see that, there's more strategy and more flexibility. What spreads really offer is they offer a better risk management. You can limit your losses. You can reduce maybe the capital required for some of these trades as well. And, you know, when you think of day trading, I sort of mentioned this in the last episode, when you're going to be doing many, many trades over the course of a year or your career, if you're setting these up where the probability of you making money is higher, but maybe, your profit is capped on some of these, you're going to always win when you do a strategy with a spread that has better risk management and you limit your potential losses and your initial capital outlay is lower, as opposed to just, you know, buying a call or buying a stock and then hopefully you hit it big when the stock runs up. Again, when you're trading, you want to think about the probability of you doing well over time, doing many trades, and a vertical spread or setting up any type of strategy with these options seems to be something that over time is going to give you better results over the long term, over many types of trades. So in terms of just talking through how a vertical spread would work is, okay, we're buying and we're selling call options at the same time. Let's just do a call option example. Well, if Tesla's trading at 150 right now, and we bought a call option with a strike price of 150 that expires in 1 month, and we're going to sell a call option with a strike price of 160 that expires in the same 1 month. Well, let's see how we would make money with that type of spread. So the first thing here, we're buying a call option. It has a strike price of 150. And let's pretend that that costs $10. Well, if we now go and sell a call option and it has a strike price of 160, that isn't worth as much because the strike price is higher. The stock needs to go from, you know, where it's at right now. Let's pretend it's at 150. It has to get all the way, you know, past 160 for it to be in the money and have any intrinsic value. So that option is not as valuable. So we're going to buy a call option that is more valuable and it's more expensive. We're going to spend $10 on that option. So times 100. So we're going to spend $1,000 to buy the call option for $150 with the strike price. And then we're going to sell a call option with a less favorable strike price, we're going to sell that for $5 per share, $500. So we've paid $1,000 for the call option, which gives us the right to buy Tesla at 150, and we sold a call option at the same time for the right to buy Tesla stock at 160, and we received a premium of $500 for that. So we are basically what's called a net debit. We have an outlay of $500. We spent $1,000, but we received a premium on the call we sold for $500. So we are net debit, we've outlaid $500. So now when the stock, you know, when we look at a scenario, and we'll just kind of look at a scenario where the stock price runs up to maybe $165. Well, you know, we have made money with this vertical spread. We have the right to buy at 150 and it's trading for 165. So we've got, you know, $15 of intrinsic value there. We basically paid $1,000 for that. So we are up $500 in that particular one. And then on the option that we sold, we have sold that for $500. And now we are obligated to pay the $500 on that. So overall, we're going to reach a profit of $500, and we risked $500 in our initial outlay. So our return on investment is going to be $100 for this scenario. So basically, what we're trying to explain there, or just showcase with some of these examples, is that the return on your investment can be quite high with setting up these vertical spreads, while at the same time keeping your money at risk relatively low when it compared to other types of trading strategies, like just buying a call option or buying a stock in the same type of investment. So again, these vertical spreads, when you set them up, and that's just, you know, a simple vertical spread. There are many other types of spreads that we will learn eventually when we talk more about strategy. But the bottom line is that options give you better flexibility. You can manage your risk better when you set these up, and you can kind of limit your potential loss as well once you play around and when you start to learn how you can set up these different types of spreads when you're buying and selling calls at the same time. So when you first kind of come across that, and even me, some of these aren't sinking in right now, and I can't wrap my brain right around every type of example. But again, you know, we've just been studying for a month or so. You know, we need to look at these things more. We need to do more examples. And we actually need to go out and trade some in our paper trading account. And I think all of this is going to slowly and slowly start to sink in. So I think we'll wrap it up there. That's sort of like a good rundown of options. It's everything we've sort of studied in the last few weeks over the month of April. I think we've got a good base where we can move on now to technical analysis. And then we're going to be 2 months closer to, you know, wrapping up this first 6 months. And then we're going to actually look into some strategy and make some real trades, well, fake trades in our paper trading account. But we're going to kind of, you know, one step closer to actually taking some action and doing some trading in our paper trading account. So again, I hope that you found this review useful. Consider checking out the show notes, or, you know, just heading to the website, or, you know, heading to our community on School. It's a free community on School. All these episodes are uploaded into our classroom section. So there's a course on options now. Everything's free. If you're interested in joining the group, it's free. You can kind of, you know, tell us about your progress. You can find accountability partners. Every week I post everything I'm learning in that group. So you can certainly go to the website, stokestrades.com, go to the community section, learn more about our community there. And everything that we're learning, we're posting there as courses, and it's all free. There's nothing for sale. There's no mentorships. There's none of that. So again, I hope that you found this useful. Thank you so much for listening. Subscribe to the podcast. Check out the YouTube channel. And next week, we are hopefully going to come out with our first discussion of technical analysis. So maybe we're going to do sort of like an intro to technical analysis and talk a little bit about what it is and how it differs from, you know, fundamental analysis, which I think most people can relate to and understand a little bit better. And now we're getting into the real charts, indicators, and the real fun stuff of analyzing stocks. So thanks so much for listening, and I will talk to you in the next episode.